Welcome to the deep dive. We're all looking for, you know, shortcuts to the truth, especially when you're dealing with these huge, complex systems that seem totally random. Today, we're jumping into the world of mathematics and physics to explore how researchers actually quantify that randomness.
And, more importantly, how they found that one of these systems converges to a predictable state much faster than anyone thought was possible.
Right. We're doing a deep dive into something called stochastic homogenization.
That sounds like a mouthful, I know.
Yeah.
But the idea is pretty intuitive. It's really all about scale. We're asking, how does the messy, discrete, step-by-step movement of a particle, a random walk on a tiny grid look when you zoom way, way out?
And the specific source material you brought focuses on something called random walks in random environments, RWRE for short.
Precisely. You can picture it like this. Think of an ant on a giant checkerboard. But every single square on this checkerboard has its own random bias. Maybe one pushes the ant slightly north, the one next to it pulls south.
That's the random environment?
Exactly. And the ant's path is the random walk. So the challenge for us is figuring out the maximum error between that ant's actual jagged path on the grid and the smooth, predictable path we'd expect to see from, say, an airplane.
Okay, so we're comparing the messy, discrete reality with the clean, continuous theory, and that process of figuring out how fast the messy part gets closer to the clean part, that's stochastic homogenization.
And our mission today is to unpack a really surprising result from the research. It turns out that under the right conditions, this convergence rate doesn't just get a little faster. It basically breaks the mathematical speed limit that everyone accepted.
So before we get to that breakthrough, let's set the scene. What kind of environment are we even talking about here? What were the rules of the game?
The whole thing hinges on a very specific kind of environment. It has to be independent and identically distributed, or IID.
Okay, what does that mean in plain English?
It means the random bias on any one square is totally independent of all its neighbors, and the overall pattern of biases is the same everywhere.
So it's like you shuffled a deck of cards and put one card on each square. What's on one square gives you zero information about what's on the next.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And one more crucial thing. The environment has to be balanced. In simple terms, this means the ant isn't being pushed in one general direction. On average, it's just as likely to go left as right or up as down. There's no drift.
It's true randomness.
True, undirected randomness. And importantly, these results only pop up in dimensions 3 and higher.
Okay, so let's establish the baseline. Before this breakthrough, what was the accepted speed limit? What was the standard error rate everyone was working with?
For decades, the best known rate, the optimal rate, was what we call O of R to the minus 1.
So proportional to the inverse of the radius.
Right.
If R is the size of the box we're watching the ant in,
right,
then if I double the size of the box, the error in my prediction gets cut in half. A steady linear improvement.
That was the reliable foundational speed.
Yeah.
And for a very long time, everyone thought that was the absolute ceiling.
Why, though? Why was that the ceiling? If you can account for the randomness, why couldn't you get a faster rate?
Because the problem wasn't just the randomness inside the box. The limit came from something more fundamental. The boundary discretization issue.
The boundary?
Think about drawing a perfect circle in a continuous space. It's smooth. Now try to draw that same circle on a grid of pixels.
It's always going to be jagged, blocky.
Exactly. That jagged edge, that mismatch between the discrete grid and the smooth idea of a boundary, introduces its own error. And that error shrinks at a rate of R to the minus 1. It was a structural bottleneck.
Ah, I see. So even if you perfectly corrected for all the random stuff happening inside the domain,
you'd still be stuck.
Yeah.
The boundary itself was the speed limit. Now, to even get close to that limit, you have to use these tools called correctors.
Mathematical sunglasses, right, to see through the noise.
That's a great way to put it. They're these complex functions that basically average out and absorb all the local fluctuations from the random environment so that the big picture looks deterministic.
Okay, but now we get to the breakthrough. The new findings got rates that were strictly better than that ceiling. So, how can the total error be smaller than the error from the boundary, which you just said was the bottleneck?
And that is the million-dollar question. It's where the magic happens. Mm. First, let's just lay out the new speeds because they're pretty stunning. They depend on the dimension.
Okay.
In three dimensions, so D equals 3, the error rate improves. It now shrinks proportionally to R to the power of negative 3/2.
Negative 1.5. So instead of the error having when I double the domain, it shrinks by a factor closer to almost 3.
A lot faster.
Yeah.
But it gets even better. When the dimension is 4 or higher, the improvement is just dramatic. The error shrinks proportionally to r squared times a small logarithmic factor.
Wait, r squared? That's a huge leap. As your system gets bigger, it gets predictable way, way faster than anyone thought.
It's a fundamental shift in predictive power.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it can break that boundary bottleneck is down to one single beautiful property of the environment, reflection symmetry.
Okay, explain that. Reflection symmetry.
Well, because the environment is IID, totally independent point by point, it means the random field looks statistically identical, whether you view it normally or you view its mirror image.
Like reading it forwards or backwards, the statistics are the same.
Exactly. And that might sound like a neat mathematical trick, but it has a massive physical consequence.
Which is?
It causes the next biggest source of error, right after that boundary term, to just completely vanish.
Yeah.
Mathematically, this error is captured by something called the third-order homogenized tensor.
A tensor, okay. So let me see if I get this. The error has a budget. The boundary issue is, like, a $10 fee you absolutely have to pay.
Yep.
But the next biggest line item on the budget was this $500 charge from the third-order tensor, and the symmetry just zeroes it out.
That is the perfect narrative. In a normal non-symmetric case, that tensor is there, it's non-zero, and its error is on the same scale as the boundary error, so you're stuck. But in the IID case, this research proves that tensor is identically zero. It's just gone.
Wow. So by removing that massive error term, the system's overall error rate is no longer dictated by the boundary. It's now limited by the next things on the list, the much smaller residual fluctuations.
Exactly. We've bypassed the main roadblock, so now we're limited by the much smaller bumps in the road that come after.
And this is where it gets really deep, right? Because to actually prove this faster rate, you have to precisely measure those smaller bumps. You have to go into the higher order correctors.
Yes. So if the first correctors smoothed out the randomness, these higher order correctors are, in a way, correcting the correctors. They account for the rate of change of the first correction. They're a much finer level of detail.
So why is that so much harder to measure in a random environment?
It's because of what we call non-local source terms. The first correctors were already global. When you try to calculate the next level, their behavior at one point depends on the accumulated effect of the first correctors everywhere.
Right. It's not a local problem anymore. It's like predicting the weather here depends on the atmospheric pressure across the whole continent.
And that just breaks all the standard mathematical tools. You can't use local information to tame this global noise. It's a huge technical hurdle.
So what was the innovation? How did they actually pin down a number for how these things grow?
They couldn't solve for them directly. It's just too complex. So instead, they developed this really clever comparison technique. They basically compared the true, complicated, higher-order correctors to simpler approximate versions of them.
Okay.
And they did this using a tool called a localized Green's function, which let them measure the growth rate, the fuzziness, of these massive global terms without having to solve the whole system at once. It was a major technical contribution.
Can you give us a sense of what those growth rates actually were? Because pinning down those numbers is what ultimately proved the faster convergence.
Absolutely. So we're looking at how fast the gradient of these higher order corrections grows as the domain size r increases.
The rate of change.
The rate of change. In three dimensions, it grows proportionally to the square root of r. But when you get to four dimensions or more, it grows much, much more slowly. Only is the logarithm of r.
And logarithmic growth is incredibly slow.
It's crawling. And those precise, slow-growing bounds were the final piece of the puzzle. They proved the leftover errors were small enough to let the new, faster convergence rate shine through.
This just keeps coming back to that one core idea, doesn't it? The power is all in that IID assumption.
It is everything. You are not going to see these improved rates in an environment with even slightly weaker correlations. If neighboring squares had any dependence on each other, even a little.
The symmetry breaks.
The symmetry breaks, that third order tensor pops right back into existence, and bam, you're right back at the old r to the minus one speed limit.
So the IID condition isn't just a convenience, it's like a hidden superpower in the system structure.
A structural cheat code, really.
So before we wrap this up, we have to talk about the exception, the two-dimensional case. Why does all this amazing improvement just fail when d equals 2?
Ah, yes. Two dimensions is the anomaly. The geometry of a 2D lattice is just fundamentally different, and it makes the correctors behave very badly. Specifically, the first order corrector grows superlinearly.
Superlinearly, so it grows faster than the size of the domain itself.
That's right. So the error it introduces just gets bigger and bigger so fast then it completely swamps everything else. Any potential gain you might get from that vanishing tensor is just, it's totally overshadowed. The system is still dominated by this massive error from the correction itself.
So in two dimensions, you're stuck at the old speed limit no matter what.
Stuck. It's a perfect example of how sensitive these results are to the underlying structure. One small change in dimension and the whole picture of predictability changes.
So if there's one key takeaway for you, the listener, it has to be this. The specific pure structure of a system matters immensely.
It really does. Here, a very specific mathematical property, this IID reflection symmetry, led directly to a physical simplification, the vanishing of that third order tensor. And that simplification is what allowed for a fundamental breakthrough in predictive power.
It's a brilliant piece of work showing that even in these massively complex random systems, finding and exploiting a hidden symmetry can lead to these unexpectedly sharp and powerful results. Which leaves us with a final thought for you to chew on. If this vanishing tensor in this specific random setting unlocked a faster convergence rate that was hidden in plain sight, what other structural properties, maybe in another physical systems like turbulence or finance or biology, might be masking an even faster path to predictability, just waiting for someone to discover its hidden symmetry?